Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we're the Love Letter Squad.
Yes, we are. And we today have something unusual. As you all know, our listeners who are regular listeners, this is a show about love letters and a show about really the just enormous strength of the human spirit in so many different ways. And today, our guest is Noah Griffin,
who is here for the second time.
Yes.
He was on our show a few weeks ago. And I recommend that you go to the website and listen to that show. We'll tell you more about that later.
Okay, and I just want to tell a little bit about Noah. I'm going to let you do it. What I want to say now is Noah is a singer, and you can talk about how you got to be that way if you like. And he is wonderful. And I went to a concert recently. It was a tribute to Sammy Davis Jr., and it was just exceptional. So, no, I'm just going to go to you. You tell about your education and journey and how you got to be here as a singer, just really briefly so we can go on to your love letter story today.
Sure. I was the firstborn son of two educators and civil rights pioneers, and I was born in San Francisco in 1946. I went away to Fisk University, a historically black college and university, in 1963. Where I developed a love and appreciation and understanding of black history and went on from there to Harvard Law. I did a couple of fellowships, one at Yale, where I did some further work in black history, picked up a Harvard Law degree, and then came home and did a couple of fellowships, one in public affairs and one in history. And for 35 years was in government, politics, and media while still writing on the side and singing on the side. And last year, 2 years ago, as a result of a stroke that happened 3 years ago, I decided to devote myself full-time to singing, writing, and history, and lecturing. And
Thank you.
I'm loving it.
Okay. I know you're loving it, and you are one of the best storytellers. So today's love letter, after the last show, I think you had mentioned some of your heroes.
Yes.
That you had so many heroes. And I thought, wouldn't that be nice? We were talking about doing a love letter to one's heroes, i.e. a fan letter.
Yes.
Of a really important sort. So Noah is back to do that with us today.
Well, the two that I picked are Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist orator, editor of the 19th century, and Charles Sumner, who was also himself a wonderful state senator, advocate, agitator, lawyer on behalf of the cause of freedom.
So I have a question then. Are
yes.
you going to tell us the stories briefly of these men so we know where we're, for people who don't know, and then why they are your heroes.
Okay.
Because this is your story. And I think there's something really touching about writing your own history, as you will be doing with these letters, writing your own history in terms of who your heroes are. That says a lot about you, what you value.
I think so. I think one is defined as much by one's heroes as one's enemies, in a sense, the people that one fights on behalf of or remembers, and one...
Yes, what you value says something about you.
And who you value.
Uh-huh, exactly.
And how they fought.
I meant when you value other people's lives, yes.
Yes, yes.
So, go ahead.
Well, Frederick Douglass was born in the eastern shores of Maryland in 1817, of unknown parentage. He knew his mother, probably a slave owner, was his father. They slipped and taught him to read.
What you're saying, a slave owner was probably his father. Is that what you said?
Right. Mm-hmm. They taught him to read. They slept and taught him to read. I had an incident that happened with a slave overseer by the name of Covey. When he was struck, he struck back. And he remembered that for the rest of his life. And
Frederick Douglass struck back.
He who is beaten most easily is beaten most often. That was one of his early... Oddly enough, he was originally a Bailey, called Bailey. His last name was Bailey. And he was probably related to Sue Bailey Thurman, who was a wonderful San Franciscan married to Howard Thurman, who was a great theologian. She didn't talk about it much, but she pretty much claimed that that was true.
But I want you to go back to that, what you just said. I think that's worth saying again. He was beaten most easily.
Is beaten most often.
Okay.
Now, he escaped Maryland and went on to the seashore and became a common sailor. He read the book Sir Walter Scott's The Lady of the Lake, and the hero was named Douglass, so he changed his name to Douglass, and he also put an extra S on there so he wouldn't be confused with any other Douglass. He wanted the slave catchers to know that this was the Frederick Douglass. He became the partner of William Lloyd Garrison in a newspaper venture, The Liberator, until he struck out and formed his own newspaper called the North Star.
And where was this?
This was the Liberator was started in Boston in 1831 by William Lloyd Garrison on Commonwealth Avenue. There's a wonderful statue to him in the Massachusetts Historical Museum. There's a statue of Lincoln which rests on William Lloyd Garrison's printing press. There was a combination of the Lords of the Lash and the Lords of the Loom. The North wasn't all that liberal at the time. The North was benefiting from slavery, from the textile manufacturing. They were sending it south, the textiles, to be they were sending it back.
Oh, the Lords of the Loom, is that what you mean?
Right, yes. As finished product from the unfinished cotton that was sent to the North. So when slavery was a necessary evil, then it turned into a positive good. And when William Lloyd Garrison began his newspaper in 1831, it was seen as bucking the trend of making money. And they marched him through the town of Boston with a rope around his neck, and he was rescued at the last moment. 1831, as you will remember, was the time of Nat Turner's revolt in Virginia, which sent shivers all throughout the South and through the North that the slaves would somehow revolt. And if the slaves were freed, they would flood the North with free labor, it was thought, because slavery had been outlawed as of 1887 in the North, and then the importation of slaves and the trade of slavery died out in the North. Frederick Douglass was very prescient when it came to the Civil War. He said the Civil War was about slavery. The South wanted to keep it, take it out of the Union, and the North wanted to keep it in. He was very, very assured about what the reasons for the war were. He was also the
first... That's really a damning comment.
He was the first male feminist, oddly enough. In 1848, he was at Seneca Falls, where women marked the beginning of their movement, the Declaration of Sentiments. They asked him to be the head of their movement. He said, no, it belongs to women. When he began his newspaper, Martin Delaney, his partner, said, let's call it the Brethren. He said, no, that excludes women. We're going to call it the North Star. When the 15th Amendment first came about, he wanted women included in it. He didn't stop it from going forward, but he wanted women included in it. The last day of his life, February 20th, 1895, he went to a suffragettes meeting. I don't know anybody who had better credentials. He served and advised 8 presidents, starting with Abraham Lincoln. All the way through, it was said that Lincoln, the only man that Lincoln feared more, respected more, was Douglas, because Douglas had actually come from further down than Lincoln had come down. So I have friends who argue that he was the number one civil rights pioneer of all time. I don't say that. I think Martin Luther King was, but I think he was the number one freedom fighter of all time.
So you're differentiating, because you needed freedom before you could have civil rights. You can't
Absolutely.
Have, it doesn't mean anything the other way around.
He argued for the inclusion of black soldiers in the Civil War. He argued successfully. 2 of his sons fought in the Massachusetts 54th Regiment. He was a U.S. Marshal. He bought a home in Anacostia in 1877 at a cost of $15,000, which was the premier home for black people. Very, very proud of it up on a hill, which still exists there in Anacostia.
So I have a question
yes.
that I don't know if you can answer. Anybody can answer, really. What is it in a person's spirit that permits him to do this? In other words, these are just all huge accomplishments. And as you say, having started off lower than Lincoln, what was like step
somehow
number
one?
Somehow
he was imbued with an indomitable will and a sense of self and being, and that he didn't steal his arms, he didn't steal his legs, he didn't steal his intellect. They belonged to him. He wrote about that. I stole these arms, I stole these legs, they belonged to somebody else. He was very clear about his relationship with people, too. He was one of the first to see that, as I pointed out, that the war, it was that Lincoln actually freed the slaves as a result of military necessity. He was against Lincoln initially. He began to appreciate and respect him. He also was the first to see that McClellan was actually treasonous, that McClellan was holding back because he wanted to preserve the Union as it was. He didn't want to free slaves. He wasn't committed to that. And in point of fact, McClellan did run against Lincoln in 1864. He saw things very clearly, as I see it. He was a clear present analyst of what happened during that period of time.
Okay, so let me ask you. You're going to write a love letter to your hero.
Mm-hmm.
you haven't come with it written.
No.
So can we just start it right now?
Yes.
What do you? What would you call him? Dear?
Hero? Pioneer?
No, I mean, as you're starting a letter, you'd say, dear?
Mr. Douglas.
Dear Mr. Douglas.
I would call us Mr.
Okay.
Douglas. I would give him that respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you mm-hmm. for all that you did.
Mm-hmm.
To bring about the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Of all America, white and black.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking the bonds that made a shame and a mockery
mm-hmm.
of the creed ennobled in our Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk about what he did for you personally?
Thank you for setting the example in a time far more challenging than ours of what it means to set an independent course in both thought and action. Thank you for speaking truth to power. And being more loyal to the truth than to any individual.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for seeing the need and pressing for passage of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
abolishing slavery, the 14th Amendment, calling for equal protection under the law, and the 15th Amendment giving the right to vote. One last thing, comma, the fruition of which has resulted in the election of Barack Obama, a day that you could not have envisioned.
Or maybe he did. Do you think so?
I thought of that the other day, that I didn't create these eyes, that my grandfather sired my father, who sired me. So my grandfather saw the election of a Barack Obama, as did my father. All the way back, they're seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
I think at some level...
Wasn't that ultimately what they were fighting for?
They were fighting for the equal opportunity to show, to participate in this democracy, that everybody could accomplish and become a part of what America was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And that sentence, what you just said in answer to Teresa, wouldn't that be, because you're writing a letter to your hero, wouldn't that be something that you would want to say personally to him? In other words, why is he your hero? not just because he did this, but because he did something.
He accomplished in a time that clearly demonstrated that against whatever odds, that were far more difficult than now.
He somehow laid the groundwork for you to
be able,
who you are.
To be, absolutely.
And a success in so many ways from center in this world.
Right. There's no way that I would have the latitude to be who I am and enjoy I don't know if I mentioned on the last program, but I had only a 5-minute conversation with my older boys about race. I told them the fact that you drink from the water fountain that you drink out of, that I'm married to whom I'm married to, that you live where you live, that you go to the school where you go to, that you take a book out of the library. Somebody paid a price for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to pay a price for somebody else.
Right. Actually, I was, when I asked that question about, do you think he foresaw a day when the President of the United States would be African-American, that maybe he would be surprised at how long it took, because at the time of the Civil War and the 13th Amendment and all of that, there was this hope that perhaps this would happen very rapidly.
Well, there was a retrenchment.
Yes,
immediately after the Civil War, up until 1877, there were troops in 5 military districts in the South that ensured the enfranchisement, in reality, of the recently enfranchised former slave.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you had Reconstruction, which is now being looked at again in a more positive light, because the North won the war, but the South won the history. Most mm-hmm. people look back at Reconstruction and say that it was a foolish time with blacks and legislators sitting, eating chicken bones and watermelon and passing vengeful legislation against the South. But that's not true. They set up the normal school system in a lot of the South, and they passed legislation which benefited poor folks generally. If you read their diaries and their letters and the newspaper accounts at the time that they had charge of, they really had bore no ill will and really wanted to close ranks and become true Americans. But that ended in 1877 with the Wormley-Huss bargain, where Rutherford B. Hayes against Tilden, the election was thrown in the House of Representatives. Hayes, who was a Harvard Law graduate, said, if you vote for me, I'll take the troops out of the South. Ended Reconstruction until 1965, when we had the Voting Rights Act. What the dream had been dashed, and it isn't until recently that now we're seeing in greater numbers African Americans in the legislatures, in the state houses, and certainly in the White House, which is a day that perhaps he could have foreseen, but more quickly coming. But the retrenchment, I don't think that he was more of a realist, though. I'll give you an example. Wendell Phillips talked about Toussaint Louverture, the liberator of Haiti. He said, remembering him, I would call him Washington, but the great Virginian owned slaves. 100 years hence, when truth gets a hearing, his name will be above the rest. It is still 100 years, more than 100 years, more than 150 years since Wendell Phillips uttered those. But we still don't know, nor do we appreciate the contribution of people like. So it takes a long time.
Yes.
I think I may have mentioned the last show that John Oliver Killens came to Fisk and said his daughter, who wrote the book, and then we heard the thunder, said, Daddy, Daddy, how come the lions are always killed by the gladiators in the arena? He said, it will be that way until the lions learn to write the history books.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now just learning about that history that's been so far forgotten and excluded.
So when you write this letter, to whom will you send it?
To Frederick Douglass.
How?
Care of Anacostia. I would send it to the Frederick Douglass History Museum that exists there in Anacostia to this day. In my most recent trip to Washington, D.C. prior to the inaugural.
Oh, that's a lovely thing to do. Okay.
We went and visited his home.
So will you put more in about yourself personally, do you think? I mean...
I could do that. And
I think that would be really
in terms
nice.
Of talking about the things that he's enabled me to do.
Yes, because what you say here is in everybody's history book. That's not news
mm-hmm.
to the, you know, people you're going to send it to. But you are going to be news and further history. I mean, I really see this as documenting your own history and sending it off and putting yourself right in it. so that in another 100 years, when people read about him, they'll read about you and see the more power that Frederick Douglass had by what, you know, it just keeps traveling on. But I was also thinking, would it be something you would want to send to your sons?
I would want to have it on record to when they're ready to read it
and
can understand and appreciate it. I think in your 20s and your teens, everything is kind of taken for granted, even a limited life, because you think of life as unlimited till you at least hit
30. That's right. Bulletproof you are.
That's right.
But here's the thing. You talked about, you said, I had a five-minute talk with my sons about race, and this is what you told them. I think that would be so worth putting in here.
Yeah.
Well, I think everything you say would be worth putting somewhere, but...
No. I think you're right.
You say a lot of important things.
Because the reason I don't burden them with that history and my own history, or my father didn't burden me with their own, I was going through the Google yesterday and I found at a time that my father said that he was taking a swing. And he was part of an interracial council in St. Petersburg in the 1930s and was given verbal approval to authorization to have a picnic on an previously all-white beach. And they have a memorial to my father there as to where he was beaten for doing that, because the police weren't... He never told me that because he didn't want me to grow up with the burden of that. That when people start talking about the dangers he went through, he would give them a stern look at the dinner table and they would hush up, because he didn't want me to think that there wasn't anything that I couldn't do or that he had suffered that kind of indignity.
How nice to put that in here.
Yeah.
This is all something to be grateful for. Also to your father. And maybe not wanting you to see yourself as a child who could be beaten easily.
He was born shortly after Frederick Douglass died, within a year. And I often look at him as a reincarnation of Douglass in many ways.
So in terms of sending it, so that I like the idea that you have two sons?
I have three.
Three sons.
I
like
daughter.
The idea. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. And where do they all live?
The two boys live in San Francisco in the marina and are rooming together. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter is a junior waiting to go to college and applying in the fall. And the baby, I call him the baby, he's 12 years old.
Oh, you haven't met? Yeah, I did not know. Okay, I see what you're saying. So what if you addressed it to them, maybe separate to each, addressed it to them at your house,
mm-hmm.
You know, what are their names?
Noah, Mark, Taylor, and Alex.
Okay, so Mark Griffin, care of Noah Griffin, your address, and you send it and you mail it with today's stamp and today's postmark date, but you never open it because it's not for you.
You know, it's funny.
And then they could find it someday, or you could give it to them someday, or if you don't, they'll find it when you're gone.
Since I spoke with you last, I went to the bicentennial of Abraham Lincoln's birth,
mm-hmm.
and I have a stamp on that day at Lincoln's own post office. It would be great to write him a letter and close that up with the stamp, with his visage on it, stamped at his home post office the day of his birth 200 years later.
Wouldn't that? There are really so many beautiful, emotionally important, and historically relevant, and artistically beautiful things you can do with this.
Yes. Yes, there are.
Okay.
You've opened up a whole area.
And you are such a storyteller. I mean, I was aware of this listening to you sing. That the music was one thing, but you were telling a story. And you sang one song about the little clouds.
Yes, it's actually the fun thing about doing this show on Sammy Davis was to read five books on his life and to get a greater understanding of who he was. Reading a book of his biography when you're 19 is different than reading it when you're 63. You really appreciate and understand.
You see different things.
Ask my father, why isn't Sammy Davis or why isn't Willie Mays more of a strident civil rights person? And my father would say Sammy Davis and Willie Mays make a wonderful contribution doing what they do. Not everybody's born or equipped to be a civil rights pioneer. And I realized he was in his own way and in the way in which he could be it. Willie Mays, by never showing up in the police blotter or being a bad citizen, turned out to be a wonderful role model.
I was going to say, or being excellent and glamorously brilliant at something.
Absolutely.
Does the work.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And so not everybody's a Martin Luther King. Not everybody's a Malcolm X.
If everybody were, we'd be in trouble. You can't have all one thing. I think.
Once someone said the forest would be a very dull place indeed if only one type of bird sang.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I don't know if we have time. Yes, we don't have time to do a whole other letter.
Mm-hmm.
But given that you have a lot of heroes, I think this would just be such a wonderful way to just establish your own history. Just let people find lots of letters. So I would guess you're going to do a similar thing for your next hero.
I would do a similar thing for Charles Sumner, who's
tell us about him.
Grave. We just daughter and I just visited on a college-bound tour back in
Boston. Tell us who he was.
Charles Sumner was the greatest United States senator ever.
Why?
He was beaten on the floor of the Senate May the 22nd, 1856, for advocating against slavery. He was damaged for 3 years. Massachusetts left that seat vacant. He came back and became an extremely forceful advocate for the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, pushed Lincoln for the Emancipation Proclamation. Earlier in 1849, argued a case against school segregation in the Boston schools, lost that case. It was a landmark. Some of the same reasoning, however, was picked up by Thurgood Marshall in 1854 to argue successfully against segregation, both in the schools and across the nation. A highly principled man, a good friend to Longfellow, kept a single course in terms of abolishing slavery, and then was key in getting the former slaves' rights.
Okay, so I'm interested in something. I have a question for you. It seems to me, now it's only two heroes, but do you tend to find heroes in people who used the law or the process to get things changed, to make the world better in that way?
Yes, who stood up against odds. Paul Robeson, Sumner, Longfellow in his own way, in the poems that he wrote. All of these.
Also, not necessarily. We just happen to be talking about two political people.
Right. I mean, there are others who were, Gandhi, King, and Mandela, to me, are my biggest heroes of the 20th century, because they did what they did without armies, just
yes.
by virtue of the moral force that they had in the world, which is spiritual to me. It changes things in the spiritual dimension, which lays the basis for more lasting change rather than change wrought by war.
So you kind of need those hand in hand, don't you? You need the legal changes and the spiritual changes.
Well, I think one of the fellows once said, peace if possible, justice at any rate. And so that may happen through war. It may happen. But I think the more lasting change is the change of the hearts.
Because when people's minds get used to something different.
Well, a lot of my conservative friends...
When you legislate how you can behave.
Tell them that if they weren't born into the change, it would never happen. A conservative, someone who worships at the feet of a dead liberal, it happened when they were born, so therefore they accepted it. But if they would have had it... It's now been said if you put the Bill of Rights up for a vote, it wouldn't pass
today.
Oh,
I've heard that, and I'm sure it's true. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so you can just take this as far as you want. And I just want to say to our listeners and to people, what a wonderful way to tell the world about yourself through those you love and admire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for just bringing up this whole possibility.
Well, thank you
both. I like it a lot.
Thank you very much. These people need to be remembered in our lives and to know that we are here because of them.
Well, I was going
to
say, not just remembered, you're carrying these people in you. We do. It's just a matter of being aware that we carry them in us.
Yes. And thank you for reminding us that all of us stand on the shoulders of the people who came before us.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I made that up or if it's a famous quote.
No, I think Newton said that. Isaac Newton. If I've accomplished anything, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
That's a new book that's out in the last 6 months, Giants, on Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, chapter by chapter.
Right.
There you go.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Well, again, Noah, thank you. And I promised our listeners I would remind them that this is Noah's second visit with us, guest. If you would like, the first show was very different. It was a love letter to your wife.
My lovely wife, Meredith.
If you would like to listen to that show, it's on our website, www.lovelettersquad.com.
Yes,
we'll spell it.
LoveLettersQuad.com.
So just go to our blog and search on Noah, and actually both of them will come up.
Well, it's appropriate that we have two because my name is Noah, right?
Yeah.
Two of everything.
Right. And keep your ears and eyes open for where Noah is performing because it's really a wonderful evening.
That's in San Francisco.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
So that's all of our time for today. So again, we hope you'll listen in every week at this time. And as we always say, we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes, and if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, you can see that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.